Illinois Public Media. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. And we begin today with Illinois government and politics. It's been 2 weeks since Governor J.B. Pritzker delivered his State of the State address and announced his budget plan for the coming year. State legislators, after a week away, are back in session in Springfield. All this spring, we'll continue hearing different perspectives on Illinois government, including how much money the state should be collecting from its citizens and how that money should be spent. Joining me now to talk about that and more is State Senator Robert Peters. He's a Democrat and serves as chair of the Illinois Senate Black Caucus. Peters represents the 13th District in Chicago, which follows the lakefront from Navy Pier, south through the Museum Campus and Soldier Field, through Hyde Park, and down to the Indiana border. Point of trivia is that the 13th District has a couple of notable past senators. Before Peters was Kwame Raoul, who's currently the Attorney General of Illinois. And before him was, of course, a man named Barack Obama, whom you might have heard of. Senator Peters, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Thanks for having me.
I know I've said all that before. Do you ever get tired of people mentioning the fact that Obama once held the 13th District seat?
No, I don't necessarily get tired, but I get reminded constantly about the pressures I face.
Well, big shoes, but also a big upward trajectories for people in that district. So let's begin with the state budget. As I mentioned, we're 2 weeks out of since the governor's address. I've often said if you really want to understand what a state government thinks is truly important, look at how it spends its money. So big picture, what did you think of the governor's budget proposal?
I mean, I think it just goes to show that even in what is a relatively tougher budget year than previous years, for a variety of reasons, that Illinois is in really great shape. You know, we've had about 9 credit rating increases during the governor's term. And then on top of that, we've expanded funding in, you know, violence intervention dollars and healthcare dollars in early childhood education. And so to me, the main thing is maintaining the things we were able to do over the last few years. And that's something that we see in this. He proposed in the state of the state, you know, what he wanted to do in terms of healthcare in the state. So we have this thing where we are able to solidify and maintain the things we've won in this budget over the last few years. And there are things that we can do that don't have necessarily this massive budget impact, but will have a massive impact on the lives of working class Illinoisans.
Now, you and I have talked a few times over the years. One of our first conversations on this program was about the pillars of the Black Caucus's agenda. A lot of those were enacted. What are some of the Black Caucus's legislative priorities this year, this legislative session?
I mean, there's a few things. So obviously, it's making sure that the implementation of those pillars continues to go into effect. From Black maternal health, which the governor has already started to move on, particularly with doulas, to making sure that, you know, the Freedom Schools are able to get the funding that they need, as well as, you know, the criminal justice work that we've done, you know, the spending that we need to make in the police training side, as well as in the pretrial side, in the violence intervention space, making sure that we have, we continue to strengthen on the economic side, for example, with the PLPA, and then hopefully we can get the Community Reinvestment Act stuff really moving here this year.
Can you remind me, PLPA, what is that?
That's the Payday Loan Protection Act. So we ended the practice of predatory lending in Illinois. We were one of the few states to make that happen. And that really has been shining through. And, you know, they've been trying to come back in Illinois and prey on Illinoisans, but we've been doing a good job blocking them. I will also add, you know, I have a couple colleagues who bring up that the extension of the pillars is around housing. And so as we've had conversations around migrants, we've also had conversations about the unhoused and the fact that we're going to continue to push to do whatever we can to give unhoused Illinoisans an ability to have shelter and safety outside from the harshness of the street. And so even though we have those 4 pillars, there's this sort of pseudo 5th pillar this year that's popped up around housing and doing what we can to provide for our unhoused population.
Well, that is a great segue into the migrant situation in Chicagoland particularly, but also in a few downstate locations as well. And earlier this year, the state was reporting around 38,000 new arrivals in Illinois, mostly bussed up from Texas. How do you think Illinois is doing at balancing the sort of immediate needs of these individuals with the existing challenges of poverty and homelessness, as you said, among long-term residents?
Yeah, I mean, so you know, the first thing I try to talk to people about is, so I'm a descendant of three people of diaspora. I'm Black, and I'm a descendant of people who literally migrated from the South to the North via a bus, and they parked in the west side of Chicago and the west suburbs. I'm a descendant of folks who migrated from pogroms, anti-Semitic pogroms in Eastern Europe to the west side of Chicago. And I was adopted by an Irish Catholic father who escaped settler colonial Ireland, whose fa my family escaped settler colonial Ireland and came to the United States. And then my adopted mother, her family escaped war, you know, was in the you know, in Czechoslovakia at the time, or Czech Republic, or Bohemia, depending on how you want to put it, but they're Czech, and was escaping war to come to the United States, and they landed in West Virginia. And so, you know, in those three or four folks I've descended from, both biologically and in terms of my own adoption, we're talking about a sense of migration from one place where there was extreme pain and repression and oppression to come to the United States, or to move to parts of the United States where they had the sense of opportunity, the sense of freedom, the ability to live their true selves and their true lives, and to seek dignity. And so whether it's leaving Alabama, or leaving English-controlled Ireland, or war-torn Czech Republic, or you know, anti-Semitic Ukraine and Lithuania to come here, or it's someone who's Venezuelan and trying to get here, that being a migrant and coming to Illinois and Chicago is as old as time when it comes to our state, and particularly the city I represent. Every time we have had people migrate to our state and to our city, it has been met with harsh right-wing voices, nationalist voices, trying to push back against this population. And I decided very early on that I would not be put down in the history markers as looking like a nativist. I don't want to be seen as part of a modern day know-nothing party. If you're Irish in America and you don't know anything about the Know-Nothing Party, then I advise you read up about your history. But and so I think that compared to previous iterations of a migration of people, we are doing a much better job. I think that is an important context to put here, is that compared to the past, we are doing a much better job. But I still think there is more that we can do. And I think that really, really heavily comes from the federal government, it must be said. The federal government needs to do more. I think it's unfair that Texas, controlled by a pseudo-fascist and Greg Abbott, is getting all this funding not to provide for people while shipping folks off, whether it's to here or to Colorado or to any other, or to New York. And in fact, we need to get some of that money. Now, the state is going to chip in some money. The city has chipped in money. Cook County has chipped in money. And it has slowed down a bit. I would not be surprised if it doesn't ramp up the busing of people from Texas to here as we get closer to the DNC. But I think that it would be incumbent on the federal government to continue to push to give us more funding, to make sure that we give people who are here undocumented their, you know, a path to citizenship, and a fair path to citizenship, not an onerous path to citizenship. As well as at the same time making sure that people who've been here and have been struggling get the services that they need. But it, I think we're balancing this well. This is a in itself a crisis, and unlike previous crises that we had in terms of healthcare, we don't necessarily have the support from the federal government that we need. But I'm confident that if we continue to push, we continue to organize, we can make that happen.
There are a few threads I want to try and unravel from what you said there, which covered a lot of ground and a lot of points on this issue. One of them is this idea of state spending. Illinois allocated, I believe it was $160 million back in November. The governor pledged another $182 million in the next budget year. Do you support spending that amount of money on this latest group of migrants arrived in Illinois?
Yes, I mean, the only thing I'll say to people is we have to make a choice. Do we want people to die in the street because they're not getting the services they need, or do we want to provide them shelter? No matter what, it's going to be a cost to the public in Illinois. Do we want to put that money in a morgue, or do we want to put it in housing? And it's clear there are some people who'd rather put that money into the morgue than to put that money into housing, because that's the choice we face. There are people here. Now, let me add on to this even more. People are talking about an unhoused population. Well, if you don't provide housing to folks coming in who are migrants, you're just adding to the unhoused population, which only hurts even more the current unhoused population. So in fact, we have, you know, and the governor's budget outlines this. There's money going into helping out with migrants, and there's also money to go into the unhoused. We need to continue to push on the housing fight. And in Chicago, it's amazing. There's so many people who complained about how we're not doing enough for unhoused people who got really quiet when a ballot initiative around homelessness funding started to pop up on the ballot. And that is Bring Chicago Home. Everybody in the Chicago area who talks about what are we going to do about the unhoused population? Well, for a relatively small tax on the buyer, that you can have, and if it's over $1 million, you can fund homelessness services. And I think making the wealthy pay their fair share to provide services for this population is important. So I think
this is on real estate transactions over $1 million. Yeah,
that's right. Real estate transactions over $1 million. I don't have $1 million. I own a home. It's definitely nowhere near $1 million. Most people don't. 97% of people don't even have anything close to that. A relatively top 3%, maybe, and that's only if they sell the property. So, I mean, there's all types of questions, you know, in terms of a court and legal battle. But in terms of people talking about the unhoused population, well, there's an opportunity to get the top 3%. If they are selling or buying their home, if the house is on the market, to pay into a thing that will provide massive amounts of services to our unhoused population. And at the same time, we can prevent new unhoused residents who just so happen to speak Spanish from Venezuela. So I think we can burn the candle at both ends of the stick here when it comes to housing, and whether they are from Venezuela or they're from Chicago or they're from Springfield, it doesn't matter. We can provide services for them and those opportunities and ways to do that. And I fundamentally believe there is more than enough for folks. But I got to remind people, just I don't think people realize how this goes. People will uproot themselves from Venezuela. They'll travel through an area called the Darien Gap, which is a part of the jungle between Panama and Colombia that is so dangerous that for 100 years they've been trying to complete a highway between Panama and Colombia, and they can't do it. So these people are walking through the Darien Gap. They go through that. Then they go through Guatemala, which is right now riddled with a lot of violence. They get through Guatemala. They get through the violence. Then they might ride a train from southern Mexico up to northern Mexico, possibly. On those trains, people often fall off and they just die. Brutal deaths, like, you know, literally decapitation. So you're there.
When you say ride a train, they're like riding on top of a freight train, not
exactly. On top of a freight train. Let me back up. They're riding on top of a freight train from southern Mexico, either to central or to northern Mexico. And often people are dying. Then they finally get to the border. And then if you have a baby or a child, you try to push them under barbed wire and hopefully they don't get cut up or experience massive injury, and then they get here. If you think that your butt is going to stop people from coming here, you're delusional. They're going to come here. They went through all of that. They did more. They did more of a journey than Frodo Baggins. Okay. They Lord of the Rings has nothing on what a migrant did to come from Venezuela. So you, Illinoisan or Chicagoan or whoever you might be, ain't going to stop it. But what we can do is make sure that they're not on the street being unhoused, getting sick, or dying. And inevitably, in those options, we as a state have to pay. So the question we have to ask is, people are going to come here. They went through all that to get here. They hopped on a bus where maybe they were surrounded by people who were not the best people, who were sick or in need. They come here and you aren't going to stop that. Like, it ain't happening. What we have a choice to make is whether we're going to spend that money on something that's preventative care, or we're going to react and spend the same type of money in a very bad, destructive manner. And my belief is we should not recreate the things that we saw that happened to the Irish, to Jewish folks, to Black folks, and to my Czech descendants. where we sent people here and then we said, you don't belong here, you get nothing, and punish people. We should in fact say that we put up the Statue of Liberty to be more than a thing that we put on a stamp. It's a value that we live by.
I got to say, I did not have Lord of the Rings analogy for American immigration on my bingo card for today. So that is a new one on me. We are going to continue our conversation with State Senator Robert Peters. He's a Democrat from Chicago. He is chair of the Illinois Senate Black Caucus. We need to take a break on our program. We will continue when we return here on the 21st show. I do want to mention, before the break, in a little more than a month, on April 8th, Southern Illinois will once again be in the path of a total solar eclipse. We are going to be talking about it on the program leading up to that. We'd love to hear from you. Do you have eclipse plans? Where are you planning to see it from? What parts of the experience are you looking forward to? Or if you've seen it before, what was the experience like? You can leave us a voicemail anytime, day or night, 217-300-2121. Let us know about your eclipse plans at 217-300-2121. More to come with State Senator Robert Peters after the break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are continuing our series of conversations with leaders from the Illinois General Assembly on this year's legislative session, the state budget, and priorities. We're talking today with State Senator Robert Peters, a Democrat from Chicago who is chair of the Illinois Senate Black Caucus. And Senator Peters, I want to talk to you a little bit about criminal justice in Illinois. You sponsored the legislation that ended the system of cash bail here. We've talked about that before. You actually worked on this before you were a legislator. How do you think it's going so far, briefly?
Oh, let me tell you something. The thing that really drives me nuts is that I love, Brian, you get me like in heated moments here, but is a bunch of people said there was $100 million spent to say that when we end cash bail, there'll be the end of days, there'll be the purge, you know,